The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277 and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stunningly gorgeous Jill Sirkin.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Well, we had another tweet there. We had lots of lovely feedback.
Right.
I say hello to Sarah Marsh Collins, who's tuning in, a little bit tardy, but she's tuning in now. And I'm just scrolling down because I saw another one. Oh, it was Charity Buddy was saying something about listening.
So. Well, while you're looking for that, I'll actually read the one I've got.
Go on.
Which is Tracy Ferguson. She says, tuned in live for chat tunes and interesting conversations. Can you say, please say a big Business Bunker thank you to George, Elise and Michelle and all the team at Island Works for their support last Saturday. We had a wonderful creative day.
So did you go, Paul?
I didn't, no.
You didn't make any cards?
No.
Oh. Well, it sounds great. And I saw some of the visuals that Tracy put on.
Yeah,
so it looked really, really lovely. I'm sure she'll be doing it again in the spring. It was Martin Reeves who says, amazing Bee Bunker show with Daryl from Kent Foundation. And Martin Reeves is the owner of Collector's Buddy. He is seeking a salary to get off disability. He fundraises for charities. He sells TV and film toys and props. And you can find him on collectorsbuddy.org.uk. That's Collector's Buddy Martin Reeves.
Cool. I think you've read that.
And Orbital Internet Group say Mr. M has a nice ring to it.
Sorry about this, Chris. We've right stitched you up here, haven't we?
I was looking for a new name anyway. So.
And Tracy Ferguson says, wishing Daryl huge success with the work of Kent Foundation that they're doing and to support people in the early stages of their biz journey. Daryl, if you think it would be any help, I'd be very happy to do a couple of Plucky's World Strengths Values sessions, and I'm based in Medway. So there's one for you. That's Tracy Ferguson. You can find her on Tazi, T-A-Z-I, 64, and she's the owner of pluckysworld.com. That's Plucky with a Y-S.
Talking about Tracy, she's also tweeted, ha ha ha, such a funny opening to the Business Bunker conversations. Hello, everyone. She said, yes, Jules, if it belongs to there is an apostrophe.
That's what I said.
Before the S or after the S, if the word ends in S. She said, it's not confusing at all. No.
Yeah, but you just look perplexed, you see. I knew I was right.
Yeah.
I didn't like to
absolutely.
Say. So we had a couple of emails sent in. There's a listed railway station close to me, actually, in Whitstable. It's the Faversham Railway Station. And it's going to undergo a major refurbishment according to new plans. The station could undergo extensive work to transform a number of its facilities with a planning application submitted to modernise facilities. And the Grade 2 listed station could see new toilets, revamped waiting rooms, platform benches and stairs as part of a project to improve accessibility and update the station. This will include a new ticket vending machine, a new bin store and cycle parking facilities. I quite like Faversham Station. I've spent many an hour there waiting for a train.
Yeah, it is a bit tired now, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but I quite like the tired quaintness of it all, the sort of the green ironwork and that. I kind of like. And there is a cafe there, and there are loos. So I've been to the loo there. It's all very nice, but I'll be interested to see what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Tracy, again, in response to you, Jules, saying it was a fantastic day at Island Works. Lots of great feedback. Everyone loved the day and the venue. She said, I left the door open and people wanted to come in and buy my cards.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. She said, I've spent the weekend reflecting on the experience, which I absolutely loved. I have to tell you, Tracy, I spent the weekend reflecting on the experience, but not for the reason that you think. We had a really terrible start to Saturday morning, unfortunately.
What, in Island Works?
Yeah.
Oh, what happened?
Nobody turned up to open up.
Oh.
All the staff were off sick.
What are you doing to them?
So we had a bit of a funny half an hour.
Well, you'll have to get John Merden to open up.
Yeah.
He's on the island.
We got there eventually, but the early morning Saturday yoga crew was stood outside, unfortunately.
Shivering.
Yeah.
I noted that there's a strike on Sheppey at one of the schools, isn't there, this morning I heard on the news.
Yeah, there is currently only one school, but it's being divided into two schools.
What's the school called?
Oasis Academy.
Yeah, I think that it was them, maybe it was them that was on strike, I heard this morning.
Yes, they were on strike.
Due to classroom...
Behaviour. Student violence, yeah.
God, that's
towards the teachers.
Awful,
yeah.
Awful. Yeah. We've had an email from Seven Oaks Chamber.
Yeah, well, you can read that in a minute. I'm on a roll here.
Are you?
I'm still talking about Tracy's tweets.
Roll. Yeah. Yeah, go on.
She said, it was a great conversation with Daryl. Such an important point, rematching mentor and mentee personality as well as experience. Absolutely. Sorry, you can read that one now.
Can I? Thank you so much, Mr. Andrews.
Oh, we got Whitstable Mum in custard shortage again.
Seven Oaks Chamber, we hope you can join us for our December the 1st of Wednesday networking meetings. The meeting is sponsored by Wealden Properties. It's hosted by Beatrice Wilson House at Rockdale in the Seven Oaks High Street. Please note there is no parking on site. Use the Stag car park and walk through. This is on the 6th of December, which is next Wednesday, I think, Paul Andrews.
Yeah, yes.
10:30 till midday. And they also have a Seven Oaks Chamber Next Gen. Very hip for that, the Next Gen. If you're an entrepreneur or a young professional at the start of your career, we hope you can join the Next Gen committee for festive drinks and nibbles at Fuggles Beer Cafe. Fuggles is a mix of a pub. It's a Belgium-style cafe and bar in the heart of Tunbridge. It's a great location for the Next Gen to celebrate 2023 and have a Christmas drink. Tickets are £15.50. This includes food, cheese and charcuterie, and a welcome drink, glass of house wine, Prosecco, beer or soft drinks, two soft drinks. And this is on the 12th of December, 12:30 to 2:30, and that's the Seven Oaks Chamber Next Gen.
Okay.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
Talking of John Nurden, did you go to his gig at the...
No, because I was at the other do, wasn't I?
Oh, you were at my
do. The Abba, Abba, Abba.
The Abba, Bubba, Buzz.
Yeah. I was a guest of honour on a table, so I couldn't. But I did text him and tweet him, and I don't know if it was recorded. I'd love to have seen it.
Did he do Whitstable Mum and Custard Shortage?
Of course he did, yeah. I was headlining. But he didn't do my others. There was pegging on the...
we avoided that.
He used me for a lot of stooges. But there was also one where I was moaning about bin things. There's pictures of me with my hands on my hips by bins
and
lots of wheezes over the
and
years.
And having your bush trimmed.
Well, I'm actually meeting with Keith Bothwell, residents of Marine Crescent, where I live, Marine Parade and Marine Crescent, where they keep cutting the buckthorn bushes down the council, which is dislodging homes of all the roosts.
It's making your weasels homeless, isn't it?
It's making your weasels and your foxes, and it's the biggest roost in Kent for starlings.
The biggest moose?
Roost. For starlings and sparrows.
I think you had a moose on Tanks and Slopes.
Oh, I'd love a moose. Chocolate, please. It's really sad. They keep hacking down these bushes, and it's so annoying. And also the money they're spending, because, you know, the councils are broke, but they keep cutting the grass to bare whatever. Broadstairs is nice, though, isn't it? That's where you are, isn't it?
Very lovely.
Yeah. Do you know Keebles? I don't know how to say it. Keebles,
yeah.
Where my mate, Craig Mather, is the chef there.
Oh, really?
And am I right? They've got two Michelin stars, I believe.
I believe so, yeah.
I believe. So, happy to meet you then. Have a good old...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'll get a
make sure
there.
She pays, though, Chris.
A tray of fish.
Yeah. He's good, old Craig, because he used to be at Little Ships in Ramsgate.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
top chef.
It's about time we talk to these two folks, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to introduce, here we go for it, Chris McCallanan.
It will do. It will do.
No, I'm going to get this right. Chris McCallanan.
Close.
McAlonan.
Yes.
McAlonan.
Just say to be sure now. It's McAlonan.
Oh, okay, yeah, got to do it in an Irish accent.
Yeah,
okay,
it works every time.
McAlonan.
I don't know why I'm going up high.
McAlonan. Yeah.
Why am I going up high?
We've completely destroyed his reputation with his workmates, obviously, with this. Sorry, Chris. Louisa Jared. I mean, Louisa, we can say that. I mean.
That's too easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, really. You need to set us a bigger challenge.
Actually, you've got that wrong. Yeah.
Chris and Louisa are from Orbital Internet. Thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure to have you. We'll start off by hearing from each of you and tell us a little bit about you personally, and then we're going to talk about Orbital and its history and what you do and all the things you do, and then we'll have a bit of a moan about digital phones or something. not that that's your fault. Yeah. Cool. Go for it. Who wants to go first? I don't mind.
I'll go first. Yeah, so I wasn't always in the internet trade. I was banking as well, like Daryl. So,
gosh.
We're all from
all
banking.
There's bankers in this world.
Yeah. Was going to get a job, moved to Australia, saved up a load of money. That job fell through, so I decided to just leave the UK, as you do.
Okay. I'm going to trump you two.
Okay.
I'm going to trump you two.
Please don't trump live on.
I'm going to trump you two because... I was the head of internet banking for Citibank before the invention of the internet and before the invention of PCs.
Internet banking and no internet.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. There's a hamster on a wheel.
Exactly. Tin cans and bits of wet string. Yeah. we had a global electronic banking network for our customers before the internet existed and before PCs had been invented. 1979.
Wow.
How weird is that?
I hope you had shares in that one, Paul.
No, I didn't.
Missed the trick again.
People don't always realise, you know, I mean, technology's been around quite a long time and we could do stuff with technology before the internet. When the internet came along and dear old Berners-Lee got us HTML and everything, it kind of radically changed everything. Before then, everything was proprietary. So I was actually an expert in IBM SNA networks. Which were global networks as long as you bought IBM kit. Yeah. And that's how it was. What the internet did was liberalize the entire market, basically, where you could attach anything to anything.
Yeah.
Whereas before you couldn't do that. You could do the same things. You could build things, but it was all proprietary stuff. And that was a big difference.
Anyway. But I'm intrigued, Chris, by you were going to Australia and then you couldn't go. So you still left.
They were going to let him in, but they couldn't pronounce his name. So they kept calling him over to Tannoy and he didn't hear, you see.
My flight.
So where did you go? Vietnam?
I mentioned that earlier. That's where I ended up.
Where did you go?
I was going to travel the world for a year.
Yeah.
You can't travel the world in a year. It's just not enough time. So we did about a year and a half, ran out of money and decided we weren't
ready to
come. Me and my partner.
Oh, lovely, yeah.
Weren't ready to come home. So we worked in China, saved up some money.
Whereabouts in China?
Beijing.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite quite smoggy.
Yeah.
Interesting, though. I'd recommend it.
Most smoggy places... For me, Delhi, Cairo, Beijing and Dubai is quite smoggy at times.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Where they're doing the COP28.
Okay.
So did you love Beijing?
Mixed feelings. It's a strange place.
Yeah, but, it's a different culture.
It's worth going just to see.
Apparently there's 2 million bicycles there.
Or 9 million.
Probably.
Oh, is it 9 million?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I'd say more, but yeah.
We'll have to ask Katie Mellower.
Yeah.
So... What did you do after you left Beijing?
Did another stint. So did Nepal, did the Himalayas, down through India, and then ended up in Vietnam. Did that for a year and a half.
Wow. What were you doing?
Just teaching if I was working, teaching business and English.
Wow.
Really interesting. COVID hit, the work disappeared, so home I came and here I am to stay.
All right, cool.
Kind of fell on my feet with Orbital because it's very similar to the work that I was doing in the bank, like solutions for businesses. So
who are you working for?
HSBC.
Oh, my favourite bank.
Yeah. Yeah, so now I'm with a nice company, so I'm very lucky there, and onwards and upwards, I'd say.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Magic. Yeah, Louisa.
Hey, so yeah, I'm a newbie, relatively newbie to Orbital, and coming from a background in large corporate telcos for too long to remember now, and I'm absolutely, to your point, I'm absolutely loving it. It's a fantastic company, and to me, an absolute no-brainer to be working for a company that's focused on, you know, communication, but communication in the right way.
Yeah.
Communication for the customer. And that was really key.
Hmm.
The culture at Orbital is fantastic. And, you know, being a Kent girl, working in Kent for a Kent company.
Can't get better than that.
Exactly.
So what do you do there?
So I'm head of sales for Orbital. And we are just coming together as a sales organisation now and coming out to try and promote more and to talk more, but also to try and highlight some of the concerns of customers
we all love a moan about technology.
Oh, absolutely.
I have to say, this isn't aimed at Orbital at all, because Orbital are nothing like this. Orbital's support has always been second to none, in my opinion. But one of the problems, HSBC, one of the problems with, especially with large corporates and their technical deploying technology, is they don't ever test them on humans. Yeah, they test them on other techies who actually know their way around a system. And it, you know, for the rest of the world, when there's a problem, it just you just end up with these really daft things where, you know, computers say no and there doesn't seem to be any way around it because nobody's thought of a procedure to get around it with a human interface. We had a classic, an absolute classic of technology failure the other day. My poor old mum's got an ulcer on her leg, yeah. Can't get a GP's appointment for love nor money, who can, yeah. Eventually, I lodge a complaint saying this has to be looked at because it could be dangerous. So eventually, I get a text message from the GP that says, oh, yeah, we need to look at this. Can you take a photograph of your mum's leg and text it back? Well, I don't live with my mum, so I drive the 18 miles to my mum's house, take a photograph of her leg, text it back, and it says you can't deliver this text message. It's a no reply text number.
Yeah, that's fairly standard NHS. So how do you differ?
How do Orbital differ?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't text customers.
Yeah. Well, let's start at the beginning. Let's start at the beginning and talk about all the things that Orbital do. I was saying to you off air, I go back a long way with Orbital because I started my business in the same year that Darren started Orbital, 1998, 99. Yeah. And when he started, he used to be next door to where we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were in a building just a couple of doors along from where the studio is here now when you first started. Now you've got a lovely place in Beeksbourne.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. But he did start, you know, where we all started, in a shed somewhere. So give us an overview to start with, an umbrella overview of the range of things that Orbital do.
Yeah, sure, I can take that. So we, as you know, we set out in 98. We actually set out to help businesses that typically couldn't get good broadband.
Yeah.
So we specialised in putting our own kit in and delivering that in wirelessly from repeaters around Kent.
Yeah.
So that's called WireMax. We still use that tech today.
Yeah.
But actually now we've grown in size and in solutions, and now we provide all the internet connectivity possibilities.
Yeah.
So your broadbands, your full fibres and your lease lines to all the wireless options as well.
Yeah.
So we've actually got fiber in different parks now as well. That's our own fiber, so we don't actually use Openreach for some of the areas. We use our own, and that means you get preferential rates there for things like full fiber and lease lines as well. So that's basically a snapshot of what we do.
When Orbital first started, you used to do website hosting as well. Is that something you still do?
We still do that.
Yeah, we can
do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because when it first started, that was one of the main businesses. That, and then moving into broadband provision. Okay. So you provide website hosting. You've got a range of products for both home and business in terms of technology. Just talk us through some of those. One of the products you've got, I've used it myself at home, I'm very pleased with it, I was too, is a thing called VFast. So tell us about VFast.
So VFast is actually our residential arm, so we're part of the Orbital side of things, so I don't actually involve myself in the VFast side of things, but that's more for residential.
So basically it's a WiMAX based system for residential use. Okay, cool. So, you offer fibre services to businesses. Talk us through what that is. I actually use one of your fibre links as well.
So is that like Truly? Because I've got see Truly everywhere. Is that a similar thing?
Yeah. So a lot of the ISPs like ourselves will tap into the Openreach network and we'll essentially resell that. Some of us will put our own fibre in, and that is essentially small glass tubes that go underground that you beam laser beams through at the speed of light. That's why it's a lot faster than your standard broadband, which is copper based. And that's basically what fibre is.
Yeah.
And then if you have that direct into your home, there's no copper interference, so it's much, much quicker.
Right, right. I know you guys are doing business ones, and I've got a business fibre link. But I'm intrigued this because I didn't see you put it in when you were doing it. I mean, do you have to dig the road up? Do you have to dig a big trench and lay it? How does it work? How does it physically work? How do you do it?
Again, it depends. A lot of areas like business parks will have like trenches and ducting already in place, so we'll utilise that if it's already there. If you've got your own like private fibre link, which is a lease line, then there might be roadworks that's needed.
Yeah.
So it really depends on where you are, how far you are from the exchange, what's there already.
Right.
We'll come and assess that, and then we'll decide what to do from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because it's interesting. Years ago, there's a company, you may have came across them in your life in the city, a company called Colt. in London, the City of London Telecoms, and they used to run all their cables through the sewer network in London.
Wherever they could get it in, I think that was the point.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Which led to some really nice jokes about the standard of their service.
Exactly.
You can imagine, can't you? Cool. I want to talk about internet connectivity because there's a lot of stuff going on about it now in terms of throughput and all the rest of it. You quite often sign up for a service and it will specify what I would have called a baud rate, which is very old technology, but they'll go 35 megabytes or something for £50 a month or whatever. What are the main issues when you're looking at providing an internet service to a business, to a building? What are the things that we really should look at? Is speed what they claim it to be, or is that just one of the mix of things that you look at?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things to look at, really, and speed is probably one of them, and then contention is probably the other one. Talking about contention, broadband is a shared network.
Yeah.
So it's heavily contended. Hundreds of businesses could be using the same line. Mm. So at busy times, people are downloading lots of files. It's going to be very, very slow.
Which is why at 6 o'clock in the evening, it suddenly goes kaboom as everybody's downloading movies for the evening.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So, and that's broadband for you. So if you've got something that's not shared, like a fiber lease line or a wireless lease line, no one else can touch that, so you're not going to see any of those dips at all. So that's contention. And then you've got speed. It's kind of like, I'd say it's kind of like roads. So if you've got like an old rickety road leading from your house, you're trying to send traffic down that, it's going to be quite slow because you have to maneuver around the road. If you've got a high speed motorway that's not touched by anyone else coming straight from your house, it's going to be instant. So speed is something to consider, and so is contention.
Okay. I mean, if we have a fibre link from you, is that normally uncontested?
So fibre link is probably the same as leased line, so that would be uncontended,
Okay. Explain the difference. I'm from old school, before fibre, when all we had was leased lines. In fact, I'm from before Killerstream and Megastream, and you probably don't even remember those, do you? You just don't even remember Killer. Well, when I was in the business, Killerstream and Megastream were the new things. they were basically lease lines that offered you 1 kilobyte or 1 megabyte. But a megabyte link was like, you had to turn over the contents of the Bank of England to get one of those. Explain to the listeners what you mean by a leased line.
Yeah, okay. So so you've got fibre that runs underground. That's a shared network.
Yeah.
So full fibre is essentially the shared network that everyone uses. That's the new ultra-fast version of broadband. Everyone's sharing it. So, again, you're going to have dips in performance.
Without paraphrasing you, Chris, the fibre technology is a replacement for the old copper cable technology,
absolutely.
Which everybody wants to take out because it's not very effective anymore, and copper costs a lot of money. So you have the medium, if you like, which is fibre. So, but as you kind of intimated yourself, that fibre can just be part of the standard broadband network, yeah.
Yeah, so that's everywhere, basically, in lots of places. Everyone can tap in. But the difference between that and a lease line is having your own fibre wire all the way from the exchange, however that's delivered through ducting or whatever, into your property. No one else touches that.
Yeah.
It's just you. So it's totally secure, totally ultra-tight and fast. Yeah. And that's really the difference there.
It's interesting how we've actually gone back to where we started from my point of view. Because before the internet, as it were, the only way you could connect to the telephone network, to the PSTN, was via a lease line. Yeah, so you had to have a lease line to your local exchange or whatever. It was the only way you could connect unless you used dial-up.
Yep.
Yeah, which, of course, is really old school.
Well, we all remember it, though.
Do you? Yeah. Do you remember dial-up? So there were only, in the early, even with the early days of the internet, most of it was dial-up, That was the only way you could get into it. And big companies tended to have lease lines, which was a fixed line from an exchange into their building. But intrinsically, you've still got that lease line thing. So explain to us, without making us cry, the costs of something like a lease line, because they're quite expensive, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, something that's not shared and that's high speed is going to come on a premium, but yeah. I mean, it really depends where you are. So you could be very close to an exchange, it's going to be a little bit less.
Yeah.
You could fall on one of our fibre parks that we've fibred out. We've got access to that, so that brings the price down as well.
Okay.
It could be anything. It depends on where you are, what speed you need, what size company you are.
And it's primarily distance from the exchange, yeah?
Pretty much, unless we've got that connection and fibre in there already.
Yeah, so, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So you could be looking at anything between 100 and something pound to £500.
Yeah. Is that all?
It's cheap.
So cheap.
It is. I have a Fiberlink in Sheerness, and it makes my eyes water how much that costs. And it's not one of yours, and it makes my eyes water how much that costs. But interestingly, I moaned at them, and they said, "Oh, for an extra £10 a month, we can double the line speed for you." Okay, all right, fine.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Just, you know, for a bit of line porn. do you have any clients that have, you know, really, really massively top speed stuff? And what kind of speeds are they doing?
I mean, you can pretty much get speeds of up to 10,000 meg, like 10 gig.
Yeah.
So if you've got a large operation with hundreds of people using the internet at once, you're going to need a massive speed, because they're going to be clogging up the line otherwise, and you're not going to be able to operate. So you actually need a high speed line for your operation.
Yeah.
Wouldn't recommend a 10 gig line for a one man band, because it's just overkill. But certainly for.
If it wasn't for the price, I'd go for it.
But no, like a huge HQ would certainly go for something like that, because they would be using that speed.
So as far as Orbital are concerned, you're a Kent-based company, obviously. Based in the lovely village of Beaksbourne, just outside Canterbury. Do you service just Kent, or do you work further afield?
So obviously Kent was always being the priority.
But absolutely
we have got you mentioned VFAST. We've got VFAST parks as well. So we have a large number of holiday parks across the country nationally that we're working with. And we are looking
at VFAST parks.
VFAST parks. The holiday parks.
Holiday parks. Hold on. Hold on.
That's not the name of the park. That's the name of our company that looks after the parks, basically.
I'm intrigued by this. I'm intrigued by this. So I can get a holiday with OrbitalNet, can I?
We're providing the connectivity into those holiday parks. So to owners, if you're going to have a holiday in a park, you're going to Cornwall, for instance.
So let me get this right. So if I'm going to spend a weekend in Butlins or something like that, and they've got a cabin there, you're providing the internet connections to that. Is that how it works?
I mean, we can. Whether we are at the moment, that's the question.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I'll be facetious a little bit, really. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an interesting market segment to go for.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it.
It's good. It's great.
Cool. I'm not really sure what to ask after that.
You had a bit of a question about VoIP earlier, didn't you?
In the studio here, we got a VoIP phone. I've had the VoIP phone for years. Funnily enough, the quality of the line, especially on international calls, is vastly superior to a PSTN line. And just has been for a long time.
A lot cleaner.
Yeah, it's a lot cleaner. You don't get that crackle and bake up, and sometimes the echo suppressors blow out on a PTSD line, and you get echo on it. We don't get that on the VoIP phone.
Yeah.
But of course, BT and the government have now instituted this thing to change us over from the public switch network into the broadband network, effectively, with digital voice, which means plugging your handset into a router.
Yep.
I was one of the very first people swapped onto that in 2018. Mine's been a little bit of a disaster. Well, I'm probably being a bit unfair on them. It's had quite a few problems, but spread over 5 years. But certainly more problems than I ever got with a copper-based landline, that's for sure. I mean, is it something? It's not something you actually do, is it? Do you provide voice over IP telephony?
Yeah, absolutely, we do. Yeah. So, and BT are making that change. You're absolutely right. The end date for that is 2025, but that is the end date. So it's all going to be off by then. All the PSTN public network is going to be removed. So it all needs to be digital from there. So yeah, we absolutely help companies switch over, and you could choose to wait, but we don't recommend that, because obviously if you leave something to the last minute, price of handsets could go up. There'll be demand. It'll be difficult getting installs, this kind of stuff. Plus they've already started doing that switch off in certain areas, so I would recommend looking into when your area is getting switched off. I mean, we're offering advice as well, so I'll give our number afterwards, and if you are a business, do give us a call and we'll give you some free advice on VoIP.
It's interesting, and this is where people can become confused.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these kind of technical things happen and they confuse them. Voice over IP has been around quite a long time now. And a lot of organizations have used VoIP phones. I've had that VoIP phone. I'm pointing at it as if we're on the radio. You can't see, but I'm pointing at my VoIP phone. Mm. We've had that 8 or 9 years easily. From my point of view, it has nothing to do with the digital switchover. Cause I never had a landline in the first place. So having a voice over IP phone is something that a lot of businesses have had for quite a long time. One of the things that we get approached about in some of my businesses is changing our telephone system. Yeah. What in my day would have been called a PABX. A lot of people have talked about SIP phones, and having SIP compatible, whatever they are, call them now. I don't know what they call them even. But you've got this kind of double-edged thing that says you could have had a VoIP phone ages ago, if you wanted it. And just explain how VoIP phones work, for those that don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, there's key differences. I mean, at the moment, a lot of people have got the analog copper-lined the phone. So that's connected to the internet. So you've got a copper broadband line coming in. That phone line is in that same cable, and it splits off into your home, and then you plug one into your phone, you plug one into your router. So that's all being discontinued. Now the VoIP phones will plug directly into the router itself, so you won't have that phone line coming out of the wall. That's really the only difference you will see at face value. VoIP phones, depending on the handset you got, it actually performs much better than an analog phone. You just said yourself, but you can do lots of different things, like have multiple lines over one number, and you can switch your number over to a VoIP phone as well, so you don't actually need to lose that.
You can actually take the phone home with you as well.
So
the phone isn't fixed to a location any longer. And without physically taking the phone, you can also transfer the calls to another VoIP phone and stuff like that. Because it's digital, you can do loads of clever things with it, basically. From your experience, are there still a lot of businesses that are hanging on to the old technology, or, you know, how are people reacting to a lot of this?
I think it's an interesting question, actually. I think there is still a lot from conversations we're having with our customers. And I think there's a hesitancy sometimes to know when to move, what to move, and lots of questions around disaster recovery. I think you mentioned earlier about power cuts and how that would affect the business. So again, back to Chris's point, we're really urging customers to come and speak to us and to look at what the customer requirements are, and we can talk that through.
So what happens in a power cut?
But at the moment, but depending on whether it's residential or if you're looking for businesses, a lot of businesses will have a alternatives power supply. If there is a downtime, the power's down.
So a generator? Generator,
battery
but
backup.
To be honest, with a business phone, I'm sorry, I'm really old school, but with an old PABX or whatever, even if it was an ISDN PABX, if you had a power cut, they didn't work either, even though you were on copper wire, because it took the PABX out. So the phone didn't work in any case. So it wasn't just the fact whether whether the phone was digital or not, is you were plugged into an electronic device. The only way out of that is to have a battery backup or a generator backup, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, or a mobile phone.
So are you yeah. are you advising businesses to get a small generator? Or?
Well, it depends on the requirements. It depends on the size of the business, what again, what they are looking to do next with their business as well. So we want to try and work with them on their next step on their journey as well with their growth. And how that can start at one point and go to the next level for them. So, yeah, again, urging them to come and have a consultation with us, speak to the sales team, even if it's just for advice. You know, that's what we want to do to make sure that it's the right solution for the communication for them and for their customers ultimately as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? As a domestic home user, it's been a pain in the backside. As a business, I've used digital voice over IP phones for years and swapped all of my phones out to that a long time ago because they just worked better. Yeah, and they were more, you know, easy to use. You could transfer numbers around the place. You could use made-up numbers. You've got these geolocation numbers that you can use, you know, where you can pretend to be in Glasgow when you're actually in Gosport or whatever. So from a business point of view, digital telephony has been a big benefit. I think the problem comes for domestic users, especially older people. And people, I don't know how BT and Openreach tend to go about this, but what if you don't have broadband currently? Do you know what the deal is then? If they go, right, well, you've got to change your phone, but you haven't actually got a router, you don't have internet. You know, my mum, for instance, she's 95 with dementia. Why would she have broadband? Yeah.
I think we, looking at this actually last few weeks, I think there is offerings for those customers that have no broadband at the moment. So it's an alternative line put in, but essentially it is just putting an alternative line in where a router can plug in and the phone can be used. That's what we're seeing at the moment.
Okay. So, I mean, are they forcing you to buy an internet connection? Is that how it works? Or I don't know.
No, I think it's just, at the moment, it's just under a different name.
Yeah, okay.
Put it that way.
Yeah. An old person's phone.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to get me one of those.
Get you one of those.
Yeah. So there's lots of interesting developments going on in the tech world. As Jules said earlier, there are companies around like Lightning Internet and Truly and people like that that are fibering up places now and start. Presumably they're competing with Openreach in some areas and then piggybacking off of them in others. I don't really know how they're doing it. Yeah,
pretty much exactly that. Yeah, yeah. So we're all pretty much Openreach resellers.
Yeah,
and then like I said earlier, we might put our own fibre in. So it really depends on if we've got that there or not.
Yeah,
whether we'd resell Openreach or provide our own. Really.
Yeah,
yeah.
Interesting. A few years ago, when people started looking at very rural internet, a lot of farms and things like that, and there were people that gained together and put in their own fiber because they owned the land. Yeah, because they were farmers, they had the land. They just, you know, bought a digger and drug a trench and dropped a fiber cable in there, which is quite clever stuff. I guess you won't have got involved in this, but maybe you have. There was also a period of time when people were buying satellite connections. I don't know if you've come across that, or in fact, if it was something that Orbital even helped with. No. It's not necessary anymore because almost everywhere is covered in some way or another. But about 20 years ago, there were lots of areas in the UK that just didn't have any coverage, either mobile phone or anything else. So the only way, I can't remember what they were called. There was a big satellite company that used to offer satellite connections. Cool. So, where do you see things going next?
Oh, that's a good question, isn't it?
Well, I think we're pretty solid in Kent, but I think we'll continue to sort of bolster up Kent with the new fibre rollouts, especially helping a lot of businesses with work, because that is going to be a big focus soon. And then hopefully sort of spread further afield, I think, from there, because we've already got national capability, I would say. So hopefully we'll be pushing more national.
Yeah, sure. It's interesting as well, isn't it, that as more and more things become digital and we become totally dependent on digital, you know, you can't have a bank account without without an app anymore. You know, you
can't pay for car parking without an app, it seems now.
It drives me potty. I had a massive row with Vodafone the other day. They kept saying, we're going to turn off 3G. I go, I can't park my car in Canterbury if you do that.
Yeah. I mean, some of the car parks, the Wi-Fi is terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know,
this is the bit that drives me potty. I don't mind you implementing a new technology, but putting it in place first? You know, you go to central London, you get 5G, and you're telling me you're switching off 3G, which is the only thing I get where I live. You know, you need to invest in that first.
Yeah. Sounds like we need to talk to some car parks, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
The thing that always gets me is that
they've got loads of money, by the way.
Yeah,
they have. Yeah. But you know, nothing's uniform, is it? You go to Tunbridge and you know you've got one system for car park, and then you go to Canterbury and you've got another one. You know, and Ringo is like really annoying.
I tell you what happened the other day, Ashford. I'm going to start beating up Ashford Council now because they've upset me, right? But my starting point is their stupid ANPR car parks. Yeah, there's a car park opposite County Square. Yeah, which is always quite a nice car park because it's never full, but it's an AMPR car park.
It will be now because you just advertised.
No. But listen. Yeah, so I go there and I buy my parking ticket and I spend like £15 parking there, which is fine, whatever. I get back to pay for it, right, and it doesn't produce a receipt. Okay. That's a real nuisance. But they run out of paper or whatever when it doesn't produce a receipt. So when my credit card statement comes in, I'm looking for this parking ticket. And I found a parking ticket for Hemel Hempstead. I've never been to Hemel Hempstead in my life.
How bizarre.
And then when I look, I've parked in Hemel Hempstead 4 times. And I'm going, hold on a minute. What's going on here? Somebody's cloned my number plate or something. What I found out after about 2 hours of investigation is the AMPR people that run it are based in Hemel Hempstead, and somebody in Ashford Council hasn't bothered to tell them where the car park is, so everything's billed as being parked in Hemel Hempstead.
Bizarre. Yeah?
So if I'm ever targeted for a crime in Hemel Hempstead, use my car movements to prove it. I've just got you as witnesses that I've never been there. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, in Canterbury, I've tried to renew my Ringo as I'm running around Canterbury because it's run out. And you can't because you haven't got the Wi-Fi. So you're running around with your phone, you know, up here, waving it to try and get the signal.
Yeah.
It's quite stressful.
Yeah. So, I mean, the interesting thing, just looking at connectivity and stuff like that, as more and more things become digital and our life becomes more and more digital, that's going to put a strain on the networks, isn't it? We're already seeing a move away from conventional broadcast TV into streaming TV, and all of that entails. You can get this radio station on the, not just on the internet, but on Freeview on a TV channel as well. So we're pushing more and more things into the digital sphere for delivery by broadband, internet, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, that's going to clog in some way. Do you know, I mean, this is just a daft question, but, I mean, what comes next after fibre? Do we have bigger fibre or any idea?
It's a really good question. I mean, I don't actually know, but, I mean, rolling out the fibre now, I think, is a good move to sort of cover this uplifting usage. But, who knows what the future holds.
Absolutely. No, we've got to do it. I mean, without being rude to BT Openreach and the dear old GPO that went before them, the UK has the oldest network in the world because we were first.
Yeah.
The UK had a telephone network before anybody else in the world, all laid on Khyber.
Up the Khyber Pass.
Yeah. All laid on copper. And that copper's over 100 years old now.
I think that would take on, actually, Khyber.
Yeah,
it's a nice little mix, isn't it? Copper and fibre.
I've just let out of the bag what the next thing is. Yeah. We've done copper, we've done fibre, we're now doing Khyber. But it's something that we have to be aware of, that the more and more digital things we do, the more and more things that happen in that sphere, the more the infrastructure needs to grow. It's like any infrastructure, isn't it? And you're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, there's still a huge amount of the country that isn't fibre. And just a very last point, because we're kind of running out of time, but it's a fascinating conversation with you guys. Fibre directly to the home, there are some parts of the world that went directly for that. We kind of concentrated on fibre to the cabinet and then fibre to the home. Are you seeing more and more fibre to the home or fibre to the premises?
Yeah, essentially that's what the fibre rollout is. Fibre to the cabinet is the copper broadband, because the fibres only go into the cabinet, and then from there it runs in through copper.
That is
essentially the fibre rollout, the fibre to the home and the fibre to the premises.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Look, it's been really brilliant talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Louisa and Chris from Orbital Internet, keep on doing what you're doing. We love what you do. You're a fantastic local company for us here in Kent. And we love having technical companies like you that are looking after us. So thank you for that. Give us a shout out for your website so that people can find out about the range of services you offer and they can book your nicely cost effective fibre links.
Yeah, so the website's quite easy. It's www.orbital.net. But I would recommend calling in, like I say, with a VoIP question if you've got any. I'll leave you our number. It's 0330 324 4444. And do option 2 to speak to either myself or one of my team.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. We'll put all those links on the on the radio website so that people can find them there. But for the moment, Chris and Louisa, thank you so much.
No, thank you guys.
We've got 8 minutes left of this nonsense of a show.
Tracy Ferguson says, I hadn't heard of contention before. Makes sense why there are so many connectivity problems, as Paul said, at high usage times. Very interesting conversation, says Tracy. Orbital Internet to you guys, though. Well done.
No, thank you, Tracy.
And Sarah Marsh Collings is going up to see her scientists, and she will listen properly on the catch-up, which is available after the show.
Cool. Have you got any emails you need to read?
Yeah, there's a lovely Storytellers, which is connecting through art. The Power of Stories. It's a captivating group exhibition by our lovely Kent creative, Natalie Benes, and her team. They're celebrating the connection between art and storytelling. It's going to open at the Beanies Special Exhibition Centre, the gallery, this winter. The works of 23 Kent-based contemporary artists across various disciplines. So you've got the storytellers exploring the idea that artworks convey narratives, trigger emotions, and inspire discussions. They will take place during artist talks will take place during the exhibition. You can go to www.ticketsource.co.uk/Kent-creative. Alternatively, look on kentbusinessradio.co.uk. And the one of them is 2nd of December, and they run through to the 25th of February next year. Admission is free, and it's at the Beanie House of Art and Knowledge in Canterbury. So again, look on kentbusinessradio.co.uk, and that is Storytellers Connecting Through Art, The Power of Stories.
There's Western Networking. We hope you can join us on December the 13th for our next meeting for Western-focused businesses. We're delighted to be able to host this meeting at the George and Dragon on the High Street. The meeting sponsors are Reign Supreme Accountants. Monica Falana will be speaking on the following topic: why you need to know your numbers and how often you should review your cash flow, including working capital. That's taking place 10:30 till 12 on December the 13th at the George and Dragon in Westerham. To find out more, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
And there's a meeting in PET, P-E-T-T. This is the Marsh Network, East Sussex and Kent. It's at PET Village Hall at 10:30 a.m. on December the 5th. That's next week. Book now by going to www.marshnetwork.co.uk. It's sponsored now by the FSB, Federation of Small Business, as one of their face-to-face networking events, and we thank them for their support. The meeting, this one, is all about networking with plenty of time for face-to-face discussion to build relationships. Come along, they say, and grow your contacts, network, and your business over a little coffee. And as it's the last meeting at PET before Christmas, please don your Christmas jumpers and any other Christmas attire and join us for great networking and a mince pie. And the speaker is Richard Smith. There's always details on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic.
I use the FSB, actually, for legal again. They're really, really good.
Cool.
Great. I'm glad I'm a member.
Cool. The University of Kent, Kent Business School at Canterbury, have an event, Meet Sustainability Champions, Dr. Dan Wright and Lisa Wally-Smith, at our next hybrid MBA guest lecture on Friday the 1st of December. 12:30 till 2 p.m. This free interactive event is open to students, staff, alumni and businesses. To find out more, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
And Chatham Docks is a developer behind new plans to regenerate a dockside industrial estate, which could create hundreds of jobs, and he's asking for people's thoughts on them. Well, they're asking. Businesses and residents are being consulted on proposals for an employment and enterprise zone at Chatham Docks. And the developer has now unveiled its project for a business campus called Basin 3. And it's going to transform existing brownfield land into adaptable workspace with the opportunity to create hundreds of jobs and apprenticeships.
That's fantastic. Networking. Okay. This event welcomes local businesses and individuals to network face to face while offering an opportunity to build a valuable business relationship while enjoying a lovely walk. Yeah. Mm. The walk will take around 1 hour with refreshments provided by Thackeray Williams Solicitors. Meet outside the cafe at Chartwell, dressed in your best Christmas outfit. Oh. Buddy the Elf, what's your favourite colour? December the 15th, 10:30 till 12:30. As always, the details and booking link can be found at kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
We have Maidstone Borough Council as well. Thanks to the people of Maidstone giving generously to the Christmas donation hub. So Maidstone are saying they've been overwhelmed by the kindness and generosity being shown by the people who are coming in for the Christmas donation hub. They're working in partnership with the Mall, or the Mall, however you say it, MBC, Maidstone Borough Council, and they're hosting this hub. It's open until Saturday the 16th of December. And if you're local or you're passing by, you can take in festive gifts, toys, toiletries, household products, food items, and more to be shared with local charities who will distribute them to those who may be struggling to afford to celebrate this year. And it's located on the upper level of the Mall, or the Mall, and it is being manned by volunteers, including staff from MBC, the Mall, One Maidstone, Golding Homes, and MHA Accounting. It's open Monday to Saturday between 10 and 4. So, yeah, I've just bought my Christmas very extra wide silver foil for my turkey to wrap it in. See? Extra wide. The only time I ever buy extra wide is at Christmas.
You got a hippie turkey, have you?
Big, big one, yeah. Have you? From a local lady.
West Kent Mine, the Big Give Christmas Challenge. Our Big Give Christmas Challenge runs from the 28th of November to the 5th of December. For this week only, your donations will be doubled in value. So every pound you give has twice the impact. This means if you give us 25 quid, we get 50 quid. It's a win-win situation. This year we need your help to raise £4,500 so that we can deliver vital mental health support to those experiencing the heartbreaking impact of domestic abuse. The challenge goes live at 12 p.m. on Tuesday the 28th of November. That's today. It's just gone live. You can visit our website for more information. You can find out about that by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. That's it. We've reached the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to our guests, Mr. Darryl Woodhouse of the Kent Foundation, to Chris and Louisa of Orbital Internet.
Thank you.
To the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another show next week. Thank you, everybody that tweeted, emailed, texted, and WhatsApped your messages. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.